Mullinger's Weekly Ramble.
Hello, it is Wednesday the 24th of April, 2024. And you know what time it is, that's right. It is time for Mullinger's Weekly Ramble. And I promise this week I'm going to try and keep it down to under an hour, which means either me talking even faster, and I know I already talk quite fast. See, that sounded speeded up. That was actually me talking at the speed that I want to talk. I'm constantly kind of holding back the urge to talk fast. So I either need to talk very fast or ramble a lot less. I'll start with a thought for the day. Another one of these profound thoughts shared with me by my friend Chris Hatt. And this is a quote from Doctor Who, the time-traveling British maestro. This was the 12th Doctor Who, which I believe was Peter Capaldi. And the quote goes like this. Never be cruel. Never be cowardly. Remember, hate is always foolish. Love is always wise. Always try to be nice, but never fail to be kind. Wise words to live by. And another thought someone shared with me this week, which I just thought could be useful for all of our mental awareness, keeping ourselves in check and keeping ourselves on top of the world in the middle of the week. Here we go. The next time you dislike your life, remember, it's all about perspective. I have a friend who reads 2 to 3 books a week, works out twice a day, has no financial worries, and has people all around him that want to have sex with him all the time. And yet he constantly complains about how much he hates prison. There you go. It's all about perspective. So we've got tons to cover this week. Thank you so much for all of your questions. I'll be getting to the questions very shortly. And there's tons to race through. Very controversial ones. I've been asked all kinds of things. Big deal. Big questions like Star Trek or Star Wars, which do you prefer? That could be controversial. Ethan Ashe is in town for our Big Imperial Theatre show this week. So excited to have Ethan here. We're also doing a big warm-up show. Well, it's a small warm-up show, but it's a big deal to us at Long Bay Brewery tomorrow night, Thursday night. It is sold out, as is Saturday, which is lovely. So thank you all for that. We've got big surprises in store for you. Ethan has sent a question in. Again, very controversial one. Hunter or River, pick a favourite. Okay, for those of you that don't know, those are my children. So I will attempt to, as I say, I always say that I will answer any question on this podcast. So I absolutely will. I'm going to answer all these questions later. What have I been up to? Obviously, in the last week, I dropped the trailer for the short film, The Peninsula. And I can't thank you enough for all the lovely messages and shares and just positive posts and positive vibes that you've all been, emanating towards us. This short film was a real labour of love and very much a family affair. You know, my father-in-law, Barry, is in it. My son, Hunter, is in it. And I just was just so delighted with the outpouring of shares and love that people had for it. I spoke to yesterday a very, very wonderful and talented and kind journalist by the name of Bryce McVicker from the Telegraph Journal, who will be running a piece on this film that my son wrote, conceived. The whole experience has just been amazing. As I say, it was a real labor of love for all of us. And the more that you share it and the more that you post about it, I've entered it for numerous festivals. We're going to be screening it at various theaters over the summer, including Harvey Hall. I'm also in talks to actually show it on the Kingston Peninsula itself. And this movie, as I say, it is a love letter to the Kingston Peninsula. Well, I'm granted a place that I make a lot of jokes about. That is true. I do make a lot of jokes about the peninsula. All done with love, because I truly believe it's one of the most beautiful places on earth. And have filmed other things there. And 2 episodes of Atlantic Edition were filmed on the peninsula, both of which are now on YouTube. Judith Mackin and Freeman Patterson. I've interviewed both of them. Just couldn't be more excited to see the film getting the recognition it deserves. Obviously, Tyler Warren Ellis, you know, all around genius, as you all know. Barry, my father-in-law, total trooper, and just so proud of my amazing son for you know, creating a thing, you know, coming up with an idea during COVID, watching all these TV shows. I mean, again, I, as a father, I'm not good with a lot of the stuff. Like I wasn't sporty growing up. I'm not very academic, so I can't, not very useful when it comes to helping with homework. And sure, I can kick a ball about in the garden, even though I've never played soccer in my life until my son River got interested in soccer. But, you know, Hunter is an amazing hockey player, and I'm trying to, you know, I try. I get on the ice, but I can barely move on the ice, let alone hold. Anytime I try and hold a puck, I basically fall flat on my face, which I know entertains anyone that has witnessed this, because I hear you all laughing, but I love the sound of laughter. So, you know, it's always a win. Every fall is a win. Every bruise is a win. Every time I hurt myself and I hear everyone laughing, it makes me happy. So I can't help with things like that. But so it was nice when he came to me and said, I had this idea for a film, and we were able to make it happen. We have had so many questions. I've got to tell you, I just watched the Taylor Swift Eros tour concert, the 3.5 hour extravaganza of her, you know, colossal arena tour. And I've got to say, I mean, obviously, you know, her new album came out last week, and she surprised everyone at the last second by revealing it was going to be a double album and something like 30 tracks. And then the reviews are coming out and they're all glowing. Now, you know, I'm someone that just, you know, has admired Taylor Smith from afar. It's like, okay, you know, we're a billionaire and well done. And there's certain decisions you kind of look at and go, really? The concert movie, when I saw it was in cinemas, thought 3.5 hours. That sounds a bit excessive. And then when I went to buy my wife tickets to go and see it with some friends, I was staggered to discover that the cinema ticket prices were double normal ticket prices, because Taylor has, you know, put out an order that the prices need to be double. I thought, really? You got a billion? Do you need to be screwing the fans even more? I just watched this concert movie. 3.5 hours, not too long. I'm absolutely blown away. She is obviously, I mean, I'm stating the obvious here, and I'm preaching to the choir, and everyone knows how incredible Taylor Swift is. But I tell you this, my dear friends, Adam and Jessica Newhouse, bought me for my birthday the Taylor Swift album, Midnights, on vinyl. And my birthday was last month. So I have been listening to it Midnights quite a lot. Right. And was to kind of put it on, and I was kind of blown away upon first listening, because I'm like, wow, every single one of these tracks is already a classic. So I was kind of thinking that this album must be, you know, 5 or 10 years old. And granted, some of the tracks maybe have been given extra reverence because they've been used in, you know, emotional moments in movies and television shows. I feel like pretty much every episode of The Bear ended with a kind of a musical montage of people, of the crew, all, you know, all worn out from all the screaming and shouting they did for every episode. And then, you know, they're crying in various states of disarray and depression while a Taylor Swift song played. So, but it's hard to say how a song forms itself in your psyche, because a lot of TV shows will use a classic song or a great song or emotion. Like, there was a period when every single season finale of every show ended with a musical montage of a Coldplay track. And then I believe there was also that Snow Patrol song that was always played over every... And you kind of go, okay, well, which of the two creative fields is providing the emotional heft here? Is it the song? And the song already has this emotional growth on your brain and heart and soul. So then that elevates the drama of the show. Or is it the other way around? Is it that the show is so dramatic and that this big finale, like I'll never forget a season finale of The Shield, which was just devastating. And I think Coldplay kicked in. I'm taking us back a couple of decades because I'm an old man. And the Coldplay song kicked in. And again, it was like, there was just so much kind of depth and heart. And I was just kind of so uplifted and just moved. Again, I couldn't, but again, is it because the Coldplay song was already part of the kind of the cultural lexicon, or was it vice versa? Anyway, my point is this. As I listened to this album, Midnight, over and over, the Taylor Swift's album, I was kind of like, wow, it's quite impressive that every single one of these songs on this album sounds like a single. It sounds like the hit. You're lucky if you get, you know, one song like Antihero, every track on the album feels like a hit. Anyway, the point I'm trying to get to, and again, I'm rambling, which is not good because we're trying to do this in under an hour and I've not even got to the questions yet. My point is that in reading the Guardian newspaper in the UK review of the Taylor Swift album, I was at the new album with 35 tracks. I was absolutely floored when they said and pointed out that Midnight only came out 18 months ago. And I was absolutely floored. I'm thinking, what? I'm listening to this album. I know all these songs. And again, I know they're played on the radio all the time, but they've appeared in so many movies. I've heard them so many times that they feel like, dare I say, such classics. They feel like Beatles tracks. Like, I feel like I've known the song Antihero for as long as I've known Love Me Do. You know, it's absolutely, truly astonishing. Anyway, again, you know, I mean, I know I'm not telling you anything you don't already know. Taylor Swift is amazing. Shock horror. We didn't listen to Mullinger's Weekly Ramble to hear that. But I'm just, I guess what really thrilled me was just that, but in 18 months, an album comes out and within 18 months, it already sounds like it's been around for decades. And then, yeah, watch the Eros tour, absolutely blown away by the stagecraft and the passion for. And I guess, you know, part of it, obviously, you know, I'm a music fan, but also, you know, I'm a fan of entertainment. I'm a fan of live performance. I have this big Imperial Theatre show on Saturday. And of course, you know, I'm working tirelessly around the clock, honing every single detail and every single line of every single little joke. But that's not enough. There has to be more. And sure enough, there is indeed a big surprise at the end of the show. I'm constantly wanting to elevate everything. It's why I really, really love it anytime I get to collaborate with, like I did, we combined comedy and opera with Misha Brugger-Gossman at the Imperial Theatre two years ago. I believe about 18 months ago, we combined comedy with ballet when I got to do the 20th anniversary of the Atlantic Ballet of Canada's. So I love combining different art forms, partly because of the fact that in Canada, as I'm sure many of you know, it's one of the only countries where comedy is not considered an art form. The Canadian government refuses to recognize comedy as an art form. Spoken word is, jesting is, being clowning is recognized as an art form. But stand-up comedy is not. So again, spoken word is. So like if I do a one-man show, one-man play, that's art. If I do a spoken word, that's art. But as soon as people laugh, it becomes not art in the eyes of the arts establishment in this country. So basically what the Canadian art snobs are trying to tell you is that if people are enjoying it, it's not art. All I can say to that is, when you try and hold a room full of whether it be 200 or 1,000 people or 5,000 people or whatever it be, attention for 90 minutes through the medium of stories, uplifting tales, true stories and jokes, and you can make them laugh and cry. I think it's art, is what I'm trying to say. Anyway, what else is going on? I'm sure you all heard this one news story this week that, again, I mean, I don't know if everyone's heard this because, again, we live in Atlantic Canada and no bloody newspapers left. But the story about the league, Toronto Raptors forward centre, Jontay Porter, has been banned from playing basketball for life. Truly staggering the story that this young NBA player had everything going for him. I believe last year, before he even played for the Raptors in his old team, he was making $1 million a year. But he was found, and of course, you know, players are not allowed to bet, but he not only was he betting, he didn't bet on games he was playing, but he did bet against, shockingly, against the Toronto Raptors in certain bets. But crucially, he shared confidential information with bettors and indeed limited his own playtime to fulfill certain bets. So, for example, I don't know if you know this, but since sports gambling was made legal in, I believe, 2018, very recent, you can bet on anything. So you can bet on like a player underperforming, a player only being on the pitch or the ice or the what is it? What is it in basketball? On the wood, the wooden floor. You can bet on them only being out for a few minutes. You can bet on anything. And it's quite shocking. I mean, it's quite shocking seeing how gambling has permeated every single facet of sport now. Like, it's bizarre to me that this thing that was illegal is now not only legal, but being actively pushed. Like, you watch a sports game now and every single, there's just dozens of sports betting apps, ads popping up everywhere. Sportsbook, Betnet. And it's clearly targeted at the vulnerable addicts, because it's like, you know, come on, you know, we'll give you $10 free to bet with, and then you get the X number of points, and you get like it's gone from being illegal to like total sucking you in. I guess the best I can equate it to is it's kind of like when they had ads saying that Camel had and Marlboro had ads saying that doctors said that cigarettes were good for you. I mean, it's up there with that. How you can go for something being illegal to, if you want to read about this and how this really ruined the UK, there's a book by an amazing writer called Rob Davis, published by Faber. It's called Jackpot: How Gambling Conquered Britain, and it's basically how gambling laws were loosened in the UK, and now every single high street is basically betting shops. If you think about the average street in a Canadian small town, and you think about the number of vape shops and weed shops you have, it's that times five for betting shops, just betting. So, and you Google, I mean, look at the numbers of the billions that are being spent. And of course, I'm all for freedom of choice. But it's just bizarre to me that this thing is, anyway, this thing is, but, you know, gambling has become so prevalent and prominent and front and center that for whatever reason, Jonte Porter couldn't resist the temptation. And of course the tragedy is, you know, he was going to make way, way, way more money as a very, very talented forward center for the Toronto Raptors throughout his career than he ever would have done gambling. Anyway, found that fascinating. Look it up. Again, I'm not smart, so that's that. I have been watching a couple of things. I'm watching my son, Hunter, has got me into the TV show SWAT. I don't know if any of you know, it's by Sean Ryan, who did The Shield, which is a far, in my opinion, superior show. But SWAT is a great show, and you know, moral and clean and family friendly, and it's a different story each week. And a lot, actually, some of the alumni from The Shield are in it. Although I haven't seen Michael Chiklis yet, I would love that. But the other thing I've been watching with my wife is The Apprentice UK. Now, I don't know if everyone knows this, but The Apprentice, the awful, of course, for North Americans and indeed anyone around the world, it has a terrible historical reverence now, because The Apprentice is the reason that Donald Trump is as well known as he was in America. The Apprentice is originally, like a lot of famous shows, originally a British show. Actually, am I making that up? Okay, I don't want to say that for sure. I'm not sure which came first, the chicken or the egg, but the British one, maybe the American one came first and the British one came later, but the British one is still going strong. 18 seasons in, Lord Alan Sugar, who used to own Tottenham Hotspur Football Club, maybe still does, entrepreneur, businessman. He is the host, judge, / you know, the person they're pitching to. It has always been, and still is, 18 seasons in, one of the best shows on TV, just watching, in some cases, total morons battling it out, and in some cases, just really, really amazing women, mainly amazing women, sometimes the men are good, battling it out and achieving things. And the British Apprentice. I know lots of you watch Taskmaster. Again, that is about time Taskmaster came to Canada. It's one of the number one things people come up to me and say to me in Sobeys and elsewhere is, you know, would Taskmaster ever come here? Well, the answer is it is here in I believe, in French Canadian comedy. I believe in Quebec there's a hit version of it. It's about time, and it's gone to multiple countries. I mean, and again, and I know Greg Davies, who is the host of the UK one, and we started out around the same time, and I have actually some fun stories about Greg Davies in my next book. But Taskmaster Canada would be a great thing for the country, great thing for television, great thing for CBC or CTV or whoever chooses to make it, show it, but also a great thing for Canadian comedians, because the whole problem with Canadian comedy is no one's aware of the comedians in this country because there's no showcases for their talents other than the debaters. And for that, you only know them by voice. So it's only really helpful for me and Derek Seguin because everyone else sounds Canadian. Unless you've got a funny Quebec or British accent, then you're not, anyway. So that's what's been going on. Had a great show in St. Andrews on Saturday night. It was so much fun. Performing for an amazing Charlotte County ladies group at the Drewhaven. Oh, Drewhaven, what a venue. Go to Drewhaven. I mean, just stunning. Two amazing entrepreneurs opened this place. My friend Sean works there, who's one of my favorite musicians and touring musicians. And it was beautiful. Town and Country Club, Drewhaven. Check it out in St. Andrews. Beautiful bakery downstairs. They make gorgeous gluten-free treats. Cafe, bakery, and upstairs venue. Had an absolute blast last Thursday at Long Bay. After recording last week's podcast, I actually went off and watched Match of the Day and did Panini stickers with my son River. And we watched Crystal Palace, my team, beat Liverpool 1-0. Absolutely incredible. We were blessed enough to see Palace's own best and / only good performance last year when they beat Wolves at Palace. And it was magnificent. That was the day, of course, I became a Palace fan, having never followed football at all in my entire life. So that was a wonderful thing. And someone wrote last week, and maybe I forgot to answer this question, asking what else I collect and what else my passions are, because obviously I'm into trading cards, Panini stickers. Doing Panini sticker albums is one of my favorite things in the world to do. I mean, one of my earliest memories of doing that, and doing it with my kids now makes me I'm never happier than when I'm doing a Panini sticker album with my sons. I have ridiculous collections. I have a huge collection of vintage St. John guidebooks, maps, books, actually all of New Brunswick, actually all of the Maritimes. A ton, just mountains of rare vintage archive. It's a funny thing, actually, especially with St. John, when you find vintage like political brochures or guides or old newspaper editorials from 50 years ago or 60 years ago or 70 years ago, because you read all the things that politicians or city leaders were saying, and it's literally the same shit they're saying now. It's on the up. Things are going to happen. This is going to happen. That's going to happen. Word for word, you could literally take things that were written about St. John in the 1960s and just print them now, and it would be word for word the exact same thing. But I'm sure it's going to happen. I just now came from Tim Hortons in Milledgeville, where I had the great honour of being a judge in the annual Smile Cookie Decorating Contest, organized by the beautiful and wonderful Murphy family, who own many of the Timses around here, including, I have a lot of favorite Timses, and it's well documented how much I love Tims. Tim's sausage breakfast wrap, I truly believe, is the greatest culinary invention of all time. My favorite Tims in the world, there's a few. But, I mean, there's no contest. We're at Lawnville. The Lawnville Tim's was designed with such perfection that when you sit by the fire, it feels like you're kind of, it feels like you're in a little cozy cafe, and you're kind of by a highway and you're by an Irving, but you go in there and you just feel, also, I've been there all times of day and night and never wait in the lineup. Anyway, this is, I'm a huge Tim's supporter, consumer. When I'm on the road, I probably shouldn't admit this. I used to eat a lot of sushi, but you know, times are tough and you've got to watch the pennies. So I'll be honest, when I'm on the road, sometimes I will eat Tim Hortons three times a day, like the breakfast wrap, and I'll have the chicken, slow cooked chicken. You know, you've got grilled chicken, you've got lettuce, you've got tomato in a wrap. It's healthy. You're getting your veg, you're getting some of your fiber there, you're getting chicken, good bit of protein. Beautiful. Anyway, my point is, yes, so I was there judging the Smile Cookie Decorating Contest. For those of you who don't know, the Smile Cookie, it's an incredible Tim Hortons initiative, which is in its 28th year, where basically each Tim's, because of course the great thing with Tim's, because they're all, you know, some people go, oh, but the company is American owned, which I don't know if that's true or not, but that each Tim Hortons is of course locally owned. It's locally owned by a local entrepreneur, a local business person, a local hero who is hiring and providing employment opportunities for our lovely people of our town. So basically, point being that the Smile Cookie initiative last year raised over $19 million for over 600 local charities. So, for example, the Murphy family who own numerous Timbers, they choose each year where the money goes. And all the money from the Smile Cookies goes to incredible causes. And this year it was for the St. John Regional Hospital Foundations, the Spinal Robot and Prostate Ultrasound Clinic. Again, you know, well documented how much I love the St. John Regional Hospital, well documented how much I love and admire the St. John Regional Hospital Foundation and the work they do, which is why my wife's Rossa Yule event each year supports the St. John Regional Hospital Foundation. You may also have seen my numerous posts about the incredible people at the Sophia Recovery Centre, which now has, I believe, two locations, again, doing literally life-saving work, saving women from dangerous situations and indeed from issues that we find ourselves faced with in life. And the incredible people, anyway, so they have decided, they have donated, they are donating the money to these two organizations, so they have a little contest. So it was really, really fun. I judged both contests, and it's my third year of running it. So we're in a Tim's, we're having fun. And it was just, you know, really lovely. Like the amazing Dr. Manson and Dr. Acker were there facing off and the amazing Shannon Hunter, president of the St. John Regional Hospital Foundation, and Andrea Scott, amazing Andrea Scott from Horizon MB. They were competing, and I get to judge and eat cookies, and it's a dream. And then after that, Lynn Nagel and Julie Atkinson and Emily from Sophia Recovery Centre faced off. So yeah, just tons of fun. And so get out there and eat a Smile Cookie. Okay, let's get to the questions. I've rambled on. I've literally been rambling. Right, we're going to get to the questions, and they are bloody good this week. Okay, so I've covered Toronto Raptors, short film, Taylor Swift, Apprentice, as I say, tomorrow night, Long Bay, Saturday night, Imperial Theatre. Next weekend after that, I'm actually at Yuck Yucks Halifax. So if you know anyone in Halifax that wants to come and laugh at my greatest hits, please do. Okay, Tamara Lee, thank you for this. What would you miss most about New Brunswick if you left tomorrow? What do you miss most about the UK? I think I've mentioned before, what I miss most about the UK is the British pub scene. Just walking in and everyone, you know, just that feeling. It's never been replicated. But luckily, Miriam Andrews at Ladysmith Manor has opened the first British pub in New Brunswick, the Thirsty Whippet, where I'll be performing. What would I miss most about New Brunswick if I left tomorrow? I mean, there's so many things tomorrow. People, which means you, so thank you. To be honest, I mean, the privilege of having a water view, like seeing water and being around water, I believe the cliche that you know, it's good for your mental health. Anytime I'm feeling down and I look at water, it does help. So people, the people of New Brunswick, well, I guess also Tim Hortons. I think it's water. It's also the amount you can do in a day. Like, it's beyond insane to me how much you can do in a day because of the fact that we can move around freely. Like the lack of traffic, like basically the best way I can put it is this: the amount I do in one day in New Brunswick, I'd be lucky if I got done in a month in London. And then that's partly why my kind of work ethic / relentless drive hasn't changed in the 10 years of being here, because I cannot believe how much we get to do in a day. So, you know, I've got, you know, today I've already done so many things, you know, dog walk, I've been to the YMCA, I've had a swim, I've had six different meetings, recording this, judge the Smile Cookie contest, have a big rehearsal tonight, which again, all will be revealed after the Imperial show. So, it's amazing being able to flit around and just get a lot of stuff done. Christopher Eldridge, thank you for this. Your quest, favorite color, airspeed, velocity of an unladen swallow. Okay. My quest in life is very boring one. It's a similar fact. It's just to make people laugh. It's all I want. And you know what? One of the things that I've become accepting of is that I'm happy with people laughing at me. So if people out there, like, They didn't have to be laughing with me. I just, the sound of laughter, people laughing, and people, there is so much misery in this horrible world that anyone laughing at any point is a wonderful thing. Not laughing at someone else in a horrible way. But if you're laughing at me because I've fallen flat on my face trying to skate, I'm down with it. My favorite color is turquoise. Love turquoise. Best airspeed velocity of an unladen swallow. Good one. I mean, I said I would answer anything. What is the airspeed velocity of an unladen swallow? I guess an unladen swallow, the swallow, which is a swallow is unladen, so it's airspeed, so it's unladen, so it doesn't have any wings, so it has no airspeed velocity. Wrong answers only. Okay, well, there you go. Wrong answers only. I got it wrong. Dave Dowell, Star Trek or Star Wars, which do you prefer? I would have to say Star Wars, although I probably would say that Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan is one of the greatest movies ever. Although I have to say I was about 10 when The Voyage Home, which is the fourth one, Search for Spock came out, what, in 85? And then Voyage Home came out about 88, 89. And I would have been around 10 when that came out. So I saw that Voyage Home at the cinema. Why do I know this? How do I remember these things? How do I literally remember the dates? Have I told you this before, that I literally know the barcodes for sandwiches that I used to input? I'm sorry. I mean, message me if I'm repeating stories on the ramble. But I know if you name a bar, like if you say, I used to type in the barcodes for sandwiches at a job I had. The ones that didn't sell, I'd type in the barcode. So like you can name a sandwich to me. Shout a sandwich flavor to me in Sobeys or wherever, Sears, whatever, Wilco, wherever you see me, shout a name, and I'll tell you the barcode, like BLT 5021498994. How do I remember this stuff? But I literally couldn't tell you what I did this morning. I mean, again, just now when I was listing everything I've done today, I forgot half of it. Amanda Green has asked, have I ever been to Grammanan Island? Depressingly not. It's a badge of extreme shame for me. I've not been to Grammanan. I'm desperate to do a gig there. My son has done hockey, had played hockey games there. One time my son was there, his name's Hunter, and he was in a cafe with my father-in-law, Barry, the star of the short film The Peninsula. There was someone at the table, another child called Hunter, and the parents just kept going, sit down, Hunter, sit down, we don't drink much. This person must have been hammered. I don't know if everyone's like that on Grammanan. I'm very excited to go. It looks beautiful. I have a story about Grammanan in my show that I'm doing on Saturday about how the gentleman that runs the Grammanan ferry boat very kindly was responsible for getting me a gig for the Canadian Ferry Boat Association in Gatineau, Quebec last year. Big story. Okay, I'm going to keep this short, so I'm going to race through. Where is the strangest place I've gotten lost and how did you make the best of it? I've got lost in a lot of places, but I mean, I would say in my hard partying days, it would be kind of blacking out and then coming to, and I would come to in all kinds of weird places. But the weirdest would have to be the middle of a dual carriageway by Heathrow Airport, about 5 a.m. I've no idea what happened. It was a GQ Christmas party. Last memory is being in a nightclub at maybe 12:31, and then suddenly I come to like 100 miles away, 50 miles away. I'm walking down the middle of a dual carriageway when I exit the blackout and come back into consciousness, and I'm walking down the middle of cars like zipping by on either side. How did I make the best of it? I got off the dual carriageway. Phoned my then girlfriend, now wife. She said, not again. And I think I managed to get a cab. I did manage to get a cab home. But I've also, you know, for example, I guess it doesn't count as lost, but I mean, the thing I would do on an almost nightly basis back, especially before I lived in London, and I was still living at home with my parents, but working in London, is I would get on the train at London Paddington, and the train to my parents in Maidenhead was about 45 minutes. I would often fall asleep and wake up 4 hours in the opposite direction, get back, then get onto the other train, go back, wake up back in London, end up, and basically just do this all night until it was time to go into work. Good times. God, sometimes it just makes you grateful to be 46 and not do that stuff anymore. Although, it was bloody good fun. Strangest place I've ever got. I've got lost all over the world. I got lost in Kuta in Bali for similar reasons. I think I got lost climbing a volcano, cooked eggs in the lava. But again, I guess any of these, if I think of better things, because I don't read these in advance, I should say. These are all fresh, so I don't have a chance to send. If I were to build an $8 million barn car storage, what features would it have? Great question, Randall Levitt. If I was to build an $8 million barn car storage, what features would it have? I mean, a cinema screen, a wine fridge, obviously a beer fridge. I guess an $8 million... yeah, I guess like a sushi making station, and I would take $1 million of that to hire someone to be standing there and make sushi. No, better. I get someone, I would never poach an employee from somewhere else, but I could hire someone who used to work at Tim's to come and make constant Tim's sausage wraps for me. It would probably be a big screen. Big cinema screen, and really just, a little stage in the corner and a mic, and I can invite people in and I could do test spots, without even, Long Bay is basically my home club, and the fact that it's a 5-minute drive away makes it perfect. That was it. And $8 million barn club said, yeah, cinema and a comedy club. Amy McIntosh, how are you? Think of you often, Amy, and I hope it was wonderful with you. If I could go back in time and meet anyone, who would it be and what would I ask them? That is such a good question. I remember doing a thing once where I was so obsessed with Quentin Tarantino as a child that I remember my friend and I, we were so desperate. Tarantino, obviously famously, was quite, after Jackie Brown, was quite slow at making his next movie. And we sat and made a pact one night that if in years to come, like in the year 2030, time travel was invented, we would get the new Tarantino movie and go back in time and show it to ourselves. And we sat there looking out the window, seeing if we would see ourselves age 50 standing outside holding what we probably then would have thought would have been a VHS, but obviously now would be a Netflix. If I could go back in time to meet anyone, who would it be? Maybe Jesus, I guess, would be an interesting chat. I'm sure I have a good answer for this. Jesus would be a good one. Go back in time. But the thing that everyone always says is, they would go back in time and kill Hitler. And you think, that as a joke has been done to death, that concept of someone going back and killing baby Hitler, and people going, why have you killed that baby? Well, it's Hitler. Who? Gervais, John Mulaney. That's one of those jokes. There's certain jokes that have been done about 50 times, and it was absolutely boggles my mind when I turn on a new stand-up special. Oh, speaking of stand-up specials, sorry, I'm rambling. I've got to tell you, I'm about 7 years late to this, but Neil Brennan, has a new special out called Crazy Good, which is phenomenal. And then I went and watched Three Mics, having read lots about it. And why I hadn't watched it before. What a roller coaster of emotions. Hilariously funny, spectacularly moving. Neil Brennan, my new favorite stand-up. I'm now I've obviously known the name for years. He co-created Chappelle's Show with Dave Chappelle. Dave Chappelle talks about him all the time. And Neil Brennan is talked about in very, very high, lofty terms by people. And I, for whatever reason, had never checked out his stuff. So I just didn't like, I was terrible. This is how terrible reality show is. Didn't like the look of him. Isn't that terrible? I now realize that is what it was. That I saw his face, didn't like, I mean, what an awful thing to admit. But again, this is my little example. I'm not going to not. So what a terrible, judgmental, awful human, like, what is with our, where did we get these awful personality traits? Anyway, watched it, loved it. This next one could be, if I could go back in time and meet anyone, who would it be? I'll tell you who it would be. I know exactly who it would be. It would be my dad's dad, who disappeared, did a runner to Canada when my dad was about 2 years old, and we've never obviously formed, and we all have this bastard's name, Mullinger. I have it, my poor wife has it, my grandmother, understandably, kept the name, even, you know, it's just what you did back then. But obviously this awful man deserted her, ran away, left her with nothing, ironically fled to Canada, which is obviously what I've now done. Well, I didn't flee. I brought the bastards with me, didn't I? Yeah, there we go. There's a pat on the back for Father of the Year. Yeah, my grandfather, my paternal grandfather, left his wife and two sons behind and never called for them, never got back in touch and never sent them any money. Me, Saint of the Year, I brought them with me. Yeah, I don't get enough thanks for that, do I? On a daily basis, I don't see anyone patting me on the back, giving me awards. Yeah. you do come across these people that literally want a pat on the back for everything. Chris Rock has a great routine about this. These people that go, I never beat my kids. You're not supposed to. People, yeah, it's a funny thing when people want to be, it's like we're supposed to be good parents. That's why we're parents. We're supposed to be good at it and or do our best. We don't have to be good. We're supposed to do our best. You know, don't get a medal for, sorry. My point is, Amy, thank you. I will go back. I would like to go back in time and meet Mr. Mullinger, my dad's dad, my beloved grandmother's former husband, and meet him and just ask him questions like, what the fuck? You know, that would be one question. No, you know what? No, not him. Screw him. Before my grandmother, before my grandmother married him in a rush, the love of her life was a gentleman whose name I will have written down somewhere because she told me this shortly before she passed. But I have the cigarette light. I have a cigarette lighter on my desk. I'm looking at it right now. That he gave my grandmother before he went off to war, which I suspect would have been the First World War, I'm assuming. Yeah, anyway, First World War. And he was killed, aged, I believe, 19 or 20. And she always said that he was the love of her life. And she talked about him all the time. And she showed me a picture of him. And she gave me this lighter that he gave her, which I have always cherished, but especially since she passed. And I'd like to go back and meet him because my grandma was my best friend. She was the, you know, again, understandably, I'm not casting aspersions that people didn't believe in me, but understandably, most people didn't, have never believed in me. I didn't show signs of being able to do anything in life. But she always said I would write a book. She always said that I'd be on the stage. She said it from a very, very young age. As did my maternal grandmother as well, who I didn't write about a lot in my first book, but there is a lot about my maternal grandmother, Frances Pleszczyska, or Frances Treasure was her maiden name. And Treasure, we were going to call Willow, our dog, actually. But then we bought Willow with the money that my grandmother left. It wasn't much. It was just, actually it wasn't even enough to buy a dog, but it paid for some of the dog. And this is my other grandmother, Shirley. Her maiden name was Clark with an E, which is why that's River's middle name. So that's who I'd go back and meet. My grandmother's first love, Amy. And I bet I'd have a bloody good time with him. And I could light his cigarette for him because I still have his lighter. But obviously tell him that it's bad for you. Although, you know, if you're about to go off to war to get blown to pieces in the trenches, don't know if you need to worry about the effects of a camel light. Isabel Elliott, you seem like a super busy guy. How do you find time to watch all those movies, attend other people's events, stream so many shows, and have time for swimming and family? Just listening to everything you do in a week exhausts me. LOL. Thank you, Isabel. What a huge compliment. Lovely thing to say. It's obviously a passion for life. I guess part of it stems from kind of a paranoia that something terrible is going to happen any minute, and it's all going to come life's going to come to an end or whatever it is. I don't know. I inherited that from my mum, this fear that something terrible is always going to happen. So I always try and max every single day needs to be absolutely maximized. I'm often doing a few things at the same time. Like anyone that's seen me at the St. John YMCA will know that when I'm on a skiing machine or a running machine, I'm also reading a book. I don't mean listening to a book. I mean holding a physical book. I also sometimes read a book when I'm doing sit-ups. I listen to audiobooks and podcasts all the time in the car, never not listening to something. Also when I'm on the loo. And I pack every day with as much as possible. But again, part of it, I think, comes back to what I was saying earlier about, I cannot believe how much you can do in a day in New Brunswick. You know, you in London, you're just treading water the whole time. You're just stuck. You want to do one thing and you just get stuck in traffic. So you just get resigned to it. So it's embracing that fact, but it's also just, yeah, not wasting any second of every day. I mean, there's... But then some would say that watching shows is a waste of time. But I'm very selective about what I watch. And this is one of the things I love about streaming, I have to say, is not watching. There's no excuse for watching crap. Although, like I say, it is a weird thing. And this is a weird thing. I mean, you're listening to this podcast, and I know it's me rambling. But there's a few podcasts. There's a podcast, Dave Attell is one of my favorite comedians. So I was listening to him on Mark Maron's WTF podcast, and I searched for him. And he was on another well-known podcast. I don't know if I should name names. Yes, fine. Well, actually, I feel like I said bad, negative things about this other comedian last time. It was Tom Segura and his wife, I believe it's his wife, Christine P's podcast, which is called something. Dave Attell is their guest. They literally ramble for about 45 minutes before Dave Attell comes on. And there were so many ads, including like 5 minutes of them reading out ads for... Now, Bill Burr, when he reads out an ad, it's hilarious. He's basically... it was them reading out ads for sports books, betting. Again, like, you know, all you have to do is download this app. And I just thought, I mean, how do we go from like the Bill Hicks era of Bill Hicks saying, if you work in advertising, kill yourself, to now comedians... And I know comedians, they got to get paid, but I kind of argue that if you're selling out arenas, as Tom Segura is, does he need to be flogging Coors Light and sports betting gaming on his podcast? You know, I think at some point some morality has to come into play. Basically, there should be a cutoff, a threshold. Like, okay, I mean, I would like to think that now, even with nothing, I would turn down sports get betting advertising, even now. But... I feel like when you reach a certain point of success, there's certain things that, or wealth, you shouldn't be hawking gambling, especially given, I would imagine, comedy podcast listeners like that would listen to that podcast would probably be susceptible to gambling addiction. Anyway, I hope that answered the question, Isabel. But I just, yeah, try and squeeze in as much as I can. Ryan O'Connor, best and worst celebrity encounter you've had. Best celebrity encounter would probably be either Samuel L. Jackson, who was hilarious. Liam Gallagher, who I'm a huge Oasis fan. Liam Gallagher was hilarious because my son Hunter had just been born. And Liam Gallagher went, Hunter Mullinger sounds like a porn star name. Thought that was hilarious. Jerry Seinfeld would be a great one. Worst celebrity encounter. There's a few. Anne Hathaway was pretty... tetchy slash I'm quite likable. I'm quite a polite person. It's a weird thing. I've had a few instances recently where someone has even people saying that, you know, and this is the thing, I want to give her the benefit of the doubt, because I've been, you know, I mean, everyone has a bad day now and again, but I would say this, I don't have many bad days in terms of like, I'm not rude. I mean, here's an example. There was a CBC article about me one time, and someone commented under it something like, you know, basically slagging me off. and saying, you know, my said something like, I my daughter or my friend or something worked at a theatre, and this James Manager guy, he's not very nice to what this person referred to as the help, right? And again, it's like, I don't have help. I mean, literally, that's not how I would ever describe anyone who is working collaboratively with me to create something wonderful to entertain people. But I read that and thought, you know what? No, that is definitely not me. I have, we can all say we've all had good days and bad days, but I can safely say that I have never been rude to someone in a theatre, venue, ever. Like, and there's not many times in life that you can say never. Like, I can't say that I've never said something inappropriate when I've been drunk or blah, 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 blah. But in a professional capacity, I can say, and it's weird, these things when people get tarred with certain brushes. I mean, I remember a lovely lady coming to a gig that me and Ethan Ash were doing a few years ago. And after the show, she said, oh my goodness, she said, I came here to see Ethan and I didn't want to come because you were on, because there's a lady that lives, and this is in the building. Is it assisted living or is it just seniors housing? But the big building on King's Square by the Imperial Theatre. And the lady said, oh, well, a lady that lives that lives in there, she came to see you at the Imperial Theatre last year. And she said it was so disgusting, so offensive, so awful. And she told everyone, and we all said, we will never see this person. And we've all been slagging you off to everyone who'll listen, that you are the worst thing for this city. Anyway, and I said, but I didn't perform there last year. Like, I performed at Harbour Station the year before, and I hadn't been at the Imperial for about 4 years. Anyway, we did some digging. We did some, turned out, it was Jim Jefferies that she was referring to, had mistaken me with. This lady had gone to see Jim Jefferies because it was like, oh, it's Jim James. Oh, he's part of the Commonwealth, Australian, British, and gone to this gig. And again, I mean, I like Jim Jefferies, but again, it's not to everyone's taste. So this lady had gone around slagging me off to anyone that would listen, that I was this horrible, shocking, offensive, rude comedian. And meanwhile, he's got me mixed up with Jim Jefferies. So it's a weird thing in any front-facing job or business when you go, people are slagging you off and it's not even you, let alone in a small city. But I guess, so you're going to slag someone off. Anyway, my experience with Anne Hathaway was not a good one. She was very rude. I am very personable, I think, and she treated me like a piece of shit. Rihanna kept me waiting for about 7 hours once. But I mean, it's Rihanna, and is that acceptable? Is it not? I don't think so. But, you know, what, didn't complain. And Anne Hathaway has started to try and shift her own narrative, I noticed. Anne Hathaway has started trying to rather problematically hijack, like, Me Too / toxic masculinity to say that imply that she was wrongly tarred as difficult and rude by the media, which led to, and it's like, well, I don't think it's really hurt your career that much, but also that was my experience, and indeed everyone who's ever interviewed her. I mean, most people are absolutely lovely who you meet. And who else was anyone else was difficult? Amy Schumer was really lovely. Best and worst touring experience, that I better save for next week because we're running out of time. I will leave us with this. My dear friend, Wendy, who I love so much, she asked a question. What do you do as a man to take care of your mental health? And if you could share any advice for men who may be struggling, what would that be? Love you. Love you too, Wendy. I will leave you with this. And I do have some other questions, which all will be addressed next week. But I don't want to drag this on too long. And I feel like it's important to end on an important one. It's a good question. What do I do to take care of my, I mean, it is a daily thing. It is something that I'm huge about. I'm aware that my brain can go to dark places. I guess going back to the original point at the beginning is about perspective always, and trying to level what is actually in front of me to what's going on in my mind. And I made this point kind of last week about how, you know, in 20 years, we would all do anything to be back here now. So enjoy this moment now. And I have, you know, my personality is extremes. I have really, really good days, really kind of up, which also scares me because I know that there's a crash coming. I'm currently reading Matthew Perry's autobiography, which is such a profoundly, beautifully and brilliantly written book about addiction and the chasing of fame. And, you know, I think when I was younger, I was definitely, I mean, and the other thing is how you differentiate when you are feeling down, trying to work out like what is actually ego and what are the things that you're worrying about that are real. But to answer your question, I mean, one of the old cliches that people say is about going for a walk and fresh air. And going back to a point I made earlier about water, I do find water really helps. Again, it's not just walking across the road to the beach. And one of the things that we all have access to in New Brunswick, no matter where we live, no matter where, what our personal situation is we have a way to get to water. Whether it be just, you know, if you're in St. John's, want to go to Rockwood Park. Looking at water, I find, gives a huge perspective. I mean, a trick that someone told me many years ago is, of course, looking up at the stars and just realizing how kind of, the more you realize how small we are, the more you realize kind of how what you do, you know, isn't necessarily going to change the universe, but what you can do is take care of yourself and the people around you. I guess, so again, and I'm not an expert. So, I mean, I always obviously, you know, suggest people get help, but I know A, help is expensive, and B, it's not also easy to get. But for me, it's about walking, fresh air, water. And if you can, get yourself into a swimming pool and go for a swim, because for me, getting into the YMCA every morning, that is me washing away negative thoughts. And I believe there's a country like Norway or somewhere where they believe in this so religiously and systematically and so profoundly that something like 93% of the entire population every day does like a dive into like a river or maybe it's ice water, I don't know, but they believe in washing away of bad thoughts. And I find, you know, exercise does do that. Obviously, finding a thing that you love to do, and stand-up comedy is that for me, where, you know, I get to flush everything out of my brain for that hour I'm on stage almost every night. And then I'm on a huge high, and sometimes then there's a crash. But water, walking, swimming, and any advice, if anyone is struggling, reach out. Oh, and speaking of reaching out, I just wanted to say thank you all so, so much for the thought-provoking and indeed personal and profoundly honest questions that you send. And again, I mean, Wendy, thank you so much for that one, which I hope, you know, I don't know anything about anything, but I hope it's been some use. You know, love you very much, Wendy. And to anyone listening that is interested in mental health and indeed failings of the system, Wendy wrote a really beautiful feature for the Mountain Medic magazine. It was volume 20, spring 2022, about the mental health crisis in this province. And also it was a tribute to her beautiful and amazing son, Riley, who we tragically lost to the mental health epidemic that we have in this region. And if anyone would like to read that, I would personally like to say that I will send you a free copy, because it is important that we remember our friends and colleagues and loved ones who have suffered because of this crisis and the people that we've lost. And it's important that we don't forget them, that we don't forget to keep talking about them, and we keep they're alive forever, because they're everything they did and everything they said and everything that they contributed to this universe lives on forever. So if anyone would like to read Wendy's beautiful tribute to her wonderful son, Riley Wortman, please just send me a message with your mailing address and I will personally send you a free copy of the volume 20, spring 2022 edition of The Mountain Medic that Wendy wrote, the most touching and beautiful, and thought-provoking, and it will move you in so many ways. So, yes, just message me. I would love to share Wendy's beautiful words with all of you. And equally, if you just like me to email you the feature, I can do that too. But I'm also very happy to send you a free copy and mail it myself to do so. On questions, it's really beautiful to me how many people have reached out with and sharing so much. Again, I'm not going to use real names in this next one. I don't know if I'm actually supposed to. It's a dear friend who is related to two wonderful people who I've worked with, Brian Finley and Ariel. And this is a relative of theirs. I don't know if I want to say it to him, but she has written to me about the awful situation of, which is something else someone actually wrote about a few weeks ago. Some of you may remember on last week or the weeks before episode about the terrible situation for anyone dating out there right now. But I'm going to read out her message. My question is, when did dating as an adult become such a gang-dang gong show? I'm 44, had no plans on needing to be in the dating pool again. However, my husband passed away very suddenly and tragically in 2020. He died in my arms in our driveway from a pulmonary embolism. My sincere condolences. I don't know when it all happened, but all of a sudden it seems that dating at this age is going like going to the dump and hunting to find the least broken and disgusting thing to take home. Kudos to you for finding humor in this, because that's very funny. But also kind of be sad. An unsolicited snap of your male appendage seems to be the norm. And I can't help but feel the same as when my cat brings me home a dead mouse. Yes, I see you're very proud of the thing you have, but I don't want to touch it. I can't be the only woman who finds the dating pool has a whole lot of pee in it since the last time I was here. Yes. So this amazing, wonderful, beautiful woman has been through incredible trauma, lost the love of her life, and is now re-entering the dating world in her 40s. And I believe we've had messages about this in previous weeks. Men, what the hell are you doing? Like, why is this? When did this? I mean, the dick pic thing is just one of the most horrific phenomenons to come out of the mobile phone. I think it is a mobile phone. I do not remember anyone snapping pictures of their dicks and taking them to Costco photo center or the Walmart and printing pictures of their male appendage, as you most beautifully put it, and mailing it to people. So why? And I hear this all the time. There's not a single woman I know, I'd believe, who is in dating at any age who has not been affected by this frankly disgusting, what's the word? It's not a phenomenon. It's a tragedy. It's an absolute tragedy that this is happening. There are good men out there. And as I mentioned the other week, I want to turn this into Mullinger's weekly dating matchmaking service. So good men who do not send pictures of their dicks, please reach out to me. And men, I don't think any man that would send a dick pic would be listening to my podcast. I would like to, I don't believe that there's much crossover. They're probably listening to Tom Segura's, frankly. It's really giving it to Tom Segura. But they probably are, realistically. They're probably listening to Joe Rogan. But if you want to see men, stop doing that. It is a sex crime. And I sincerely hope anyone that is sending unsolicited dick pics to anyone goes to jail for it. But I'm so sorry that you're going through this. There are good men out there. And like I said the other week, I think it's a great time to be dating, hopefully at 44, because all the good ones in the next couple of years, they're going to split up with their partners who they are once the kids leave home and go off to university, and they realize that they're bored of each other. And then suddenly there's going to be loads of great men and women, gay and straight and bi and everything else, all on the market. And everyone's going to live happily ever after. Thank you for listening. This has been Mullinger's Weekly Ramble. Please keep sending me your questions. Oh, and Ethan's question, Hunter River, pick a favourite. That would be like me asking you to pick your favourite Tim Hortons donut, mate. It can't be done. Love you all. Keep listening. Keep sending me your questions. comedy@jamesmullinger.com. I will see you next week. Thanks for listening.
Mullinger's Weekly Ramble.